Now, at 10, another trip to the Huddersfield Contemporary Music Festival. And before that, we delve into the music of Edgar Varèse at 9:15. Well, just now it's 6:30 here on BBC Radio 3, time for tonight's Opera on 3. It's introduced by Tom Service.
Marnie, who is she? Well, she's the title role in the American composer Nico Muhly's new opera, whose world premiere production from English National Opera we're going to experience this evening on Opera on 3 from the Coliseum in London. And she's sung by the mezzo-soprano Sasha Cook. Yet the actual character of this enigmatic anti-heroine, thief, victim, blackmailed wife, well, that's another question, which Nico Muhly's music dramatises with multidimensional flair on stage and in the orchestra pit. Now, if the title's ringing bells with all you cineasts out there, that's no surprise, because Marnie is most famous from the 1964 film by Alfred Hitchcock, with Tippi Hedren playing the title role opposite Sean Connery's Mark Rutland. Yet the melodramatic machinations of the film's story weren't what inspired Muhly and the opera's librettist, Nicholas Wright. Instead, they turned to the original novel set in England by Winston Graham, with its more subtle psychology, yet more explicit violence, as Mark Rutland rapes his wife, Marnie, at the very end of the first act of the opera. And that horrific event, and Marnie's suicide attempt, is the dramatic pivot around which the whole opera centres, as Muhly's music and Wright's words reveal and shadow Marnie's identity. Well, the Observer's music critic, Fiona Maddox, is with me this evening. Fiona, welcome.
Thank you.
And look, you've seen the opera a couple of times already. How would you describe the atmosphere it creates and its approach to the drama of Marnie?
First of all, you have to forget Hitchcock and try to take this work on its own terms. It starts with zesty minimalist flair and then opens out into something that's very approachable, quite romantic in its vocal line. Muhly is a great writer for the voice, and there's some wonderful choral writing. It's very, very listenable too.
That idea of forgetting Hitchcock, very important, because it means this isn't a melodrama we're going to experience.
Absolutely not a melodrama, and if you think it's going to be, you will be left wanting, because it offers something rather more subtle and probing, yes.
Fiona, thank you. Well, more from you in the interval of tonight's show. And you can see full programme details and a cast list on the Opera on 3 webpage of the Radio 3 website. So, in this first act of Marnie, we start with a scene of office life in England in the 1950s, grey drudgery, which Marnie enlivens by stealing from the company safe and moving on to a new life and a new identity, a pattern that she's repeated who knows how many times before. What's she running from? Well, her boss at her new job is the dashing Mark Rutland, but Marnie is chatted up by Mark's playboy brother, Terry. She rejects Terry at a poker game, but at Mark's house, Mark himself kisses her, or tries to. She realises that she's got too close to these people as well. She needs to escape again into yet another identity. So Marnie steals from the Rutland company safe. But Mark catches her in the act. Blackmailed, her only escape this time is to submit to Mark's desire to marry her. On their honeymoon cruise, Marnie's total refusal of intimacy angers Mark to the point of violence, the horrific rape and suicide attempt with which the first act of Marnie closes. So how does the composer, Nico Muhly, create all of this in his music? Well, here's tonight's conductor, English National Opera's music director, making his debut performances in his new role with this production, Martin Brabbins.
It's a very fantastical sound world, actually. Nico's really created colours to suit each scene. I mean, the piece is very varied. I mean, we've got 20-odd scenes, you know, and it ranges from a pub to a cabin on a cruise liner and the hunt. So the sound world from the orchestra is rich and varied. There are four very specific solo roles from within the orchestra. So Marnie is with the oboe. And that's the most extensive, obviously, because she has the biggest role. So the oboe does play a crucial role in this piece. The trombone is Mark Rutland. The viola is Marnie's mum. And that's really quite sinister, dark for obvious reasons, which will come clear at the end of the piece. And Mark Rutland's brother, Terry, who's a bit of a lad, is the trumpet. And there's a wonderful jazzy section for the trumpet at one point. Again, he uses it very cleverly, the orchestral colouring, for the score and for the drama.
Martin Brabbins, tonight's conductor. And the singers will hear in the main roles this evening. Marnie is sung by the mezzo-soprano Sasha Cook. Mark Rutland is taken by the baritone Daniel Okulich. The part of Terry Rutland, Mark's brother, is sung by the countertenor James Lang. Leslie Garrett sings Mrs. Rutland, Mark's mother. Marnie's mother is sung by Kathleen Wilkinson this evening. And the part of Lucy, a really important role in this act and in the second act after the interval this evening, Marnie's mother's neighbour, is sung by Diana Montague. And Martin Brabbins is on the podium in the glow of the pit here at the Coliseum in London to conduct the first act of Nico Muhly's Marnie.
To scratch these days. Thank you, Miss Holland.
To be of assistance, Mr. Rutland.
He lost his wife last year, very sad.
Look, she's nothing but the looks of
Thank you. is in a bed. Get back to work.
To sit down, Mr. Rutland's on his way. Did you say Rutland? You'll be seeing Mr. Rutland. Excuse me, please. That he's arrived.
Have we met before?
Oh, no. I've just arrived in Burnet.
What brought you here?
6 months ago. My husband died. I was alone. I wanted to make a new start in life. Please, tell me about your company.
Alcyon Brinting is the family firm. My late father named it after the shield of our crusader ancestor. I'm the managing director. My mother intervenes from time to time. My brother Terry is my wayward deputy.
Did I hear my name be taken in vain?
Mrs. Hulbert has applied for the waiter's post.
Someday, sometime, somebody's going to tell me what's going on round here. I've just discovered the price of our waterproof notebook. 7 and 6, less than it costs to print.
Could you leave my brother and me to talk this over? A pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Hulbert. Can start on Monday week.
Subject to references this way.
Christ and God and sisters, don't let me say,
for what in this world? She's been here 3 weeks. If she hasn't settled in by now, she never will. Miss Witherby, what do you think of this?
A bit steamy, isn't it?
That's what my brother says. I think a touch of sex is just what one of me is. Speaking of which, Mrs. Halbert, would a poker game some evening be of interest?
I look at my diary, Mr. Rockland.
Let me know as soon as you can. I will be alone with him in a million years.
Look sharp, the boss is coming.
Mrs. Halbert, may I have a word with you? Somebody's changed the total in this list of prices.
That was me. Did I do it wrong?
The accounts department made a mistake. You'll put it right. Have you always had such an excellent head for figures?
I've never understood the problem with them.
In a perpetual bafflement, I must confess.
It's
maybe. just took off. Why don't you stay for another drink?
I want to go.
Why so soon?
Whatever you've got in mind,
you can forget it. Why are you revolted by my birthmark? My mark of Cain. Keep away, spirited woman. Did your late husband know how lucky he was?
If you don't stop or slap your face,
what are you hiding? That your husband's not a ladies' man? Is that your secret? Have I stumbled upon a painful truth? Let me go home. Too late.
Take these away! If Estelle were alive, they'd have been changed a week ago!
Cricket.
What a ridiculous thing to do! I have the annual figures right here. If we carry on at the rate we're going, Halcyon Printing will not survive!
You sound like Terry!
What if I do? A child of two could see that the firm is Don't interrupt! I often think that Terry would make a better fist of the job than you! You are much nicer than your brother! You are much nicer than your brother! But you lack his flair!
Peggy Hulbert from my office. Peggy, meet my mother.
I'll leave you alone. Good day, my dear.
Will you show me the artwork, please? That's true. Thank you for coming all this way.
Is that all? I should have kept the taxi running.
Stay till the rain has stopped.
That would be nice. It's pelting down.
Myself as a country squire, but I went into the firm. Everything's out of kilter since the death of my wife, Esther. I eat out of the tins, the cups are chipped, the silver is I never go into. It's a melancholy place, but it fits my mood. We're very similar, you and I. Similar,
lost your husband. May I ask you how he died? Thank you. I've been looking forward to seeing you all morning.
Don't say that.
Haven't you noticed how I linger at your desk? How I call you to my office at the smallest pretext?
Thank you. money back.
But I know this must look. I
don't make excuses.
I'm so sorry.
Just do it.
You know I'll be here.
You've got a nerve to ask questions. You should be answering them.
I'll tell you everything. Just don't come for this.
How could you do this to me?
It's difficult to explain.
Try.
I was afraid of getting hurt.
By what?
By you.
Thank you.
got for us today, young man?
I bought the cigarettes you asked for. 10 senior service. Here's a change.
What's that under your arm?
I got the Daily Mirror for money's man.
Hand it over. From Mrs. Miller at the church. May God be with you in your sick bed.
Bloody old hypocrite.
This is from Marty. Read it. Dear Mother, I hope you're feeling better after your bout of flu.
Stop, she can.
Of spending money soon. Don't worry if you don't see me for a while. There's been a surprising turn of fate. Your loving daughter, Marnie. It's another 50 quid. What do you think of that? She's not all bad. Not all bad. Not all bad. Have you forgotten what she did?
What did she do? What did she do?
Marnie's baby brother would still be alive if it weren't for her. She killed that innocent child.
Thank you.
That name. I'm going to say it a lot. Mani, Mani, Mani.
Don't do that!
But I'm in love with you.
You can be in love without behaving like a beast.
What quaint ideas you have about love. It ought to flow into sex. Without any interruption.
That's just animal.
Human beings are animal. Feet in the mud where we belong. We can despise the mud that makes us human. Or exalt in it. Try exulting for a change. I've had seven sleepless nights lying next to a beautiful woman who flinches when I touch her. Hasn't anyone ever kissed you?
No.
Terry, and you let him?
No, I pushed him away.
Another life.
Stop bothering me.
Don't even let me near you. Do you call that love?
It isn't love. I never loved.
Why did you say you did?
You frightened me. You said you would call the police. No, go away. Find the cabin for yourself.
You can't get rid of me.
Where's the bed?
Watch you through a pane of glass. You broke into a darkened office.
You smashed it.
You turned the handle and say,
and found the money, saw it, eyed it, snatched it, but I spied on you like a wire. My heart was pounding, my eyes were bloody with excitement. I felt the thrill of my father being defied, and of my mother's house being robbed. I knew I would catch you. I knew you would shoot me. I knew you would be my wife. My hand, feel the tensing of my fingers, feel the pulsing of my veins. That's the strength your times have given me. I've been waiting, I've been watching. Maybe I need to be drunk to teach you how to love.
The end of the first act of Nico Muhly's Marnie in its world premiere production at the Coliseum in London. A marriage born in blackmail and bearing the dark fruit of assault and a suicide attempt. Sasha Cooke's Marnie tries to take her own life. Her reaction to the attempted rape of her husband, Mark Rutland, sung tonight by Daniel O'Coolidge. The dramatic climax of Act One of Marnie, English National Opera's orchestra and chorus are conducted by the company's music director, Martin Brabbins. Will the roots of Marnie's multiple lives, identities and psychological torment be revealed by the end of the opera? Stay tuned for Act Two of Nico Muhly's Marnie to find out, coming up in just a few minutes here on Opera on Three, here on BBC Radio 3. But Fiona Maddox, the Observer's music critic, is with me here at the Coliseum. Look, Fiona, that moment is a key dramatic moment of the opera, isn't it? And some of Nico Muhly's most dramatic music as well.
It's a very slow, tense build-up to that moment. It's a sort of turning of the screw that is agonising in those long-held orchestral lines. And this is a couple on their honeymoon having an argument about her past. It's almost a classic, except that her past is very peculiar because she has many pasts and many lives and many lies.
And we had a sense of where this guilt in Marnie's life comes from. Marnie's mother, sung tonight by Kathleen Wilkinson, revealed to the little boy, who's performed by Leo Sellis this evening, that Marnie killed her baby brother. Well, Fiona, we're going to find out by the end of the evening whether that's true or not.
We will indeed find out, but I think the really fascinating thing about this story from the Winston Graham novel particularly, which is what they particularly based it on rather than the Hitchcock film, is that instead of self-revelation in the novel, you get a woman who has absolutely no idea who she is, and indeed in that act she says, am I who I am, or am I who I've made myself, or words to that effect. And instead of with a novel or an opera or any artistic form, you expect that self-revelation to come. But here she's living moment by moment the agony of a life based on complete amorality and immorality.
There's that moment, one of the scenes, when the shadow Marnies, who are four female voices who are singing absolutely sort of flat, without vibrato, in tribute really to the early music Nico Muhly loves so much, but there was a moment where it's just her and the four Marnies singing to us here at the Coliseum in these wonderful costumes designed by Ariane Phillips, absolutely sort of beautiful 50s coats, and they're really challenging us with, do we all know who we are, just as Marnie seems not to?
I don't think we do know who we are, but we certainly don't know who Marnie is and why she has. I mean, we may say that she's in a world in which men approach her and do all the things that we've read so much about and we know to be the case. But her husband, Mark, who she's married in order to save herself from a prison sentence, is in love with her. I mean, it may be a very peculiar kind of love and one that's very controlling, but he doesn't lay his hands on her until he can't help himself. And she's pretty vile to him.
Seemingly totally irrationally, to not want any kind of intimacy at all. Look, the way this is all happening musically, Fiona, and the way things are going to happen musically in the second act, one of the contrasts, and Martin Brabins was telling us before we heard the first act, the instruments, the soloists in the orchestra that are associated with the lead characters, I thought that's particularly clear in the sort of wrenched viola writing for Marnie's mother, Kathleen Wilkinson, and this searching, floating, sort of unmoored oboe line that accompanies Marnie through, that is the musical equivalent of everything you're saying, this sense of a person that, you know, doesn't quite know where it is. It's suspended above and through the texture somehow.
In a way, I think that's something I'm hearing coming to the work actually for the third time, as it happens. And to begin with, I found the vocal writing quite slow. Perhaps I had too much of the idea of Hitchcock in my mind and expected fast action. And this is dwelling on the agony of people who don't know each other and don't know each other's sorrows and pains and agonies. And actually, the music is moving the whole time. The vocal line is soaring along it with this turbulent sea moving underneath.
Yeah, that was something that was very vividly portrayed visually as well in Michael Myers' production, designed by Julian Crouch in 59 production. So you have the ocean liner on which they're honeymooning at the end, and you're right, this undercurrent churn. At the very end, it did make you think that actually that's a kind of an aggressive boiling over of the kind of undercurrents that are really there throughout Nico Muley's score, and that are going to continue to be there as this subtle, strange, ambiguous momentum that's going to carry us through the second act. Does the balance change in the second act for you in terms of the way this sense of the inner and the outer worlds are dramatised? I'm thinking of what's coming up in the second act. There's a hunt scene, there are scenes with a psychoanalyst. It's as if this outer world becomes even more turbulent in the second act.
Well, there is the idea of Marnie being the hunted figure. She hunts herself, and she is hunted by others, and in the hunting scene, which really starts quite slowly and gets faster and faster and more agonising until there's a climactic horror of a moment. In that moment, we feel that Marnie's life has exploded in a way, because the very thing she loves, her horse, well, I don't need to tell you the story or you will tell us it, but it's the moment at which she feels the only friend she has is gone.
There's something Nico Muley said in an interview that he talked to me for another Radio 3 programme, Music Matters, which you can still hear online, and it was the idea of, actually, in a way, that this opera partly holding up a mirror to the rest of us. There's something that Marnie's already sung and kind of will continue to sing about the roles that we all play.
Nico Muley gives us various ways of trying to understand what's going on. He has the chorus both participating and commenting, and he has Marnie singing with whoever she's talking to, but also she has sort of monologues, interior monologues, where she still doesn't really know why she's doing what she's doing, but it's a different form of music, and that continues in the next act, and we hear the chorus continuing to comment, but there's a big funeral scene in which we hear Muley's skill at writing. I mean, his music is based so often on the English choral tradition, and that comes out in a very specific way which will surprise the listeners. There's a hymn that you may recognise.
Indeed, at the very end of the opera, Funeral for Marnie's Mother. I'll tell you all about that very soon. But you mentioned there Nico Muley's musical inspirations. English choral tradition, Benjamin Britten is very important to him too. Where does this piece, though, Fiona, sit for you? This is a distinctive operatic voice, Nico Muley's.
It's a very distinctive voice, but it's not radical in the sense that it's very harmonically approachable, and it's within a tradition, as you say, of minimalism, post-minimalism, Britten, all those things, as they're very beautifully woven together.
As well as that early English choral tradition as well. It's a
rich
brew of influences. Which
we hear in the four Marnie shadows that you've described.
Fiona Mullix, thank you for being with us tonight. Well, let's tell you more about the second act of Marnie, and a reminder that you can see full cast details and programme details on the Radio 3 website. Well, after another poker match that's hosted by Terry, sung tonight by James Lang, for the trapped Marnie, Sasha Cook, Mark, who's sung tonight by the baritone Daniel Okulich, persuades Marnie to see a psychoanalyst by bribing her with her beloved horse, Forio, which he promises to bring to their home. Well, with the psychoanalyst, Dr. Roman, who's sung by by Darren Jeffrey, Marnie remembers a childhood trauma. She remembers a cascade of images, a thunderstorm, a soldier, her mother, and a dead baby. Later, at a party for Mark's mother at their country club, Mark's mother, sung by Leslie Garrett, reveals that she's selling the family firm. And then a fox hunt, this key scene of the second act. As Marnie is riding her beloved horse, Forio, she's thrown from it, and Mark, who tries to help her, is badly injured. At the hospital, in the aftermath of this accident, Marnie's mother expresses bewilderment of her son's marriage. Marnie, for the first time in the opera, is really sympathetic to her husband's condition in hospital, but she resolves that it's time for yet another spin of the identity carousel. It's time to escape again. She's at another safe. We see her there, hands prized, about to get to the cash within, but she finds that she can't take the money. She flees instead to her mother's house, and there she discovers that her mother has died. And it's her friend, Lucy, her mother's friend, who's sung this evening by Diana Montague, who finally reveals the truth behind Marnie's life story, that it was her mother, not Marnie, who killed Marnie's baby brother. The very final scene of the opera, her mother's funeral, Marnie at last rejects her guilt, this freight that she's been carrying around her entire life. She admits the truth of her crimes, her thieving crimes, that is, to the police, who appear with Terry and Mark. And the final image of the opera is a striking and haunting and marvellously redolent one, because Marnie is bound by the cuffs of the law, yet she repeats and intones the deeper truth, "I'm free, I'm free." So here comes Martin Brabbins to conduct the English National Opera Orchestra, led by Janice Graham and Ian O'Corris, in Act Two of Nico Muhly's Marnie.
I never looked in a mirror like I'm doing now. She was my mirror when I spied. It was a touch, predictable, but I miss it now. Are you listening to me? Are you listening to me, Marnie? Speak to me.
never feel so alone as when you're here. We seem to talk across a void. Can't you forgive me? Can't you just try?
Up to what you did.
Tuesday.
I was with Don Witherby, as I told you.
Don Witherby is in Scotland. Why do you lie to me?
I thought you disapproved.
I do. Hostile takeover. The bastard!
Don't I get a reward for that useful information?
I'll give you a kiss.
I don't want that.
Then you can help me with my time. Summer, a sky, I
I sat on the bench. Frightened a deer. She hadn't seen me. I hadn't seen her. She sprang into life and bounded past me toward the forest, almost close enough to touch her. Been running away from me. I saw her separate bedrooms. I saw your shyness when you're getting dressed. Centuries has that field been a field? How many deer have cropped its grass? How empty it seemed without any life in it.
Empty it is all.
Remember the first time you saw it. It's a perfect paddle for a horse, you said.
It's easy.
He could peer. Your Thorio would live here. You'd find him grazing in the meadow.
I'd sleep out.
You'd find him grazing in the meadow.
Thank you.
Last week I asked you how you would feel about having a child.
You need to answer. Thoughts go wandering around the room. I look at the ceiling, crack in it that's getting wider.
What are you remembering?
Thank you. threatened.
I saw the bear that I killed. I saw your crime. Not to be true, no man says it.
Nice new word for you, Marty.
Suffocated.
Suffocated.
Yes. And a U. And an F. And an O.
Certainly not.
She says she hates you.
I don't care.
What about Strutt?
I'll pay him off.
There will be others.
I can afford them.
What if one of them tells the police?
Then I'm in trouble.
getting out of trouble is what I do. Hire a top lawyer. Go to the police. Money delivers a full confession. Mental breakdown. Desperate to return the loot.
She can go to prison.
Not if you get her pregnant.
Shut up, Terry.
Did you know she was a thief when you proposed?
I did.
So she was powerless. You had her tied and trussed like a Christmas goose. She was powerless. You sicken me. What kind of man blackmails a woman into marriage? What kind of bastard takes advantage of a slave? She's not your wife. She's an invention.
Will drain it clean.
I've paid him off.
Thank God.
But he'll be back. He can't be trusted. He'll want more money. The whole pack will be after us.
Thank you. Grief for your steel. you felt it once, you'll feel it all your life. It's part of being alive. You hate me, never. You invited Strutt to the country club. Do you know my poker instinct? Why'd you do it? The ambulance is leaving. Go with Mark. Wherever you are, remember, I'll be there.
You were angry with me, Mother.
I feel blank in comprehension. After your father died, I asked Estelle to dinner. That was the only time. Dreadful man who came to the country club.
has called again. He has discovered Mommy's mother.
She died of grief during the war.
She died 2 days ago in a seaside town, and certainly not of grief. You have been very much lied to, darling.
I've been protecting you. I'm your accomplice.
Then why have I stayed?
That's for you to explain, my darling.
The look in his eyes.
voice. Kill that thought.
didn't know where you were. Someone else.
I'm free. I'm free. I'm free. Marnie's final words in Nico Muhly's opera, as the funeral ground of her mother is suffused with a blue light of sky in 59 Productions design, right at the end of this world premiere production here at the Coliseum in London, English National Opera. Sasha Cook in the handcuffs of the police, but released at last from her lifetime of guilt, a guilt that wasn't hers at all, but her mother's. A spine-tingling moment of ambiguity, of simultaneous hope and hopelessness sounded in Nico Muhly's music and realised on stage at the Coliseum in London. Martin Brabbins conducted the Eno Orchestra and chorus here on Opera on Three. Applause there for the standout parts from the choruses, Susanna Tudor-Thomas, Ella Kirkpatrick and David Newman playing the parts of Miss Fedder, Mark's mother in 1940, and Derek. And also for the actors, Alexa Mason, the secretary at Halcyon Printing, the Dr. Roman, the psychologist, so important that scene in the second act of Marnie, Darren Jeffrey. Malcolm Fleet was sung by Matthew Durkin, Laura Fleet by Eleanor Dennis, and Mr. Strutt, who wanted to get all that money out of Marnie and Mark, was sung by Alistair Elliott. Applause now for the little boy, Leo Sellis, who's in between Marnie's mother, Kathleen Wilkinson, and Lucy, Diana Montague. The four brilliantly coloured shadow Marnies, Katie Coventry, Charlotte Beamer, Katie Stevenson and Emma Kerr. Leslie Garrett on stage, who sang the part of Mrs. Rutland, Mark's mother, and the countertenor James Lang, Terry. And there's Daniel Okulich, who sang Mark. This huge stage here at the Coliseum, but there are still places to be filled, one of them taken now for this huge ovation. Sasha Cooke, the mezzo-soprano, singing the title role of Marnie, thanking the audience and indeed the E&O Orchestra too. And their chorus, indeed, their chorus master, James Henshaw. The orchestra led tonight by Janice Gale. All of the cast coming to the front of the stage here. Strange atmosphere that Marnie leaves. It is an ambiguous feeling that we've been through this journey, but no one's quite sure where we are. We feel maybe at the very end we've got a glimpse of who Marnie is, and yet this is a strangely pleasurable place to spend 2.5 hours of music, as I'm sure you find at home too. Martin Bravin's on stage now, the new music director of English National Opera, holding hands and bringing the entire cast to the front of the stage here at the Colosseum. The composer himself is here too, Nico Muley, on stage to get this ovation and this hug from Martin Bravin and from Sasha Cooke too, as well he might. And a solo bow for Nico Muley at the Colosseum in London. So this applause ringing out for this ongoing mystery of Marnie. And with that thought and with those final notes in our ears, it's time to hand you back to Broadcasting House.
That was Tom Service. Well, next Saturday's opera comes from the Metropolitan Opera in New York, a performance of Bellini's Norma with Angela Mead leading the cast as the Druid Priestess, with Jamie Barton as her arch-rival Adalgisa and star tenor Joseph Calleja as Norma's unfaithful lover Pollione. Well, that starts at 6:30 next Saturday evening here on BBC Radio 3. And if you need another opera fix before that, go to the Radio 3 website where you can find Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin, Verdi's Aida, Cherubini's Medea, and a very rare opportunity to hear Jacopo Ferroni's Margherita. That's from Wexford Festival Opera, always a great place to discover forgotten gems. Well, in a moment we have the music of Edgar Varèse, but before that, a word from David Hepworth.
Fans of pop music want their heroes to be authentic, to live the lives they describe in their songs. Music journalists validate artists with increasingly bizarre terminology. Radio DJs are struggling for an identity now that their listeners have more music on their phones than they do in their libraries. I'm David Hepworth, and I've been thinking about these and other issues facing popular music. Join me for Nothing Is Real, Pop's Struggle with Authenticity, this Monday to Friday evening at 10:45 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, Here and Now is coming up at 10. Before that, we travel back nearly 100 years to the music of a composer whose work still sounds groundbreaking. Here's Andrew McGregor.
Edgar Varèse was one of the great original thinkers in early 20th century music, an innovator and a dreamer, constantly challenging himself to realise the music of the future with the resources of the present. In the 1920s, Varèse began developing ideas of new instruments, able to create a flowering of undreamt-of timbres, as he put it. But in the absence of the electronic instruments that still lay a generation ahead, he used the strings, winds and percussion of the conventional symphony orchestra in unconventional ways to realise his ambitions for moving sound masses, astonishing soundscapes that could bring within reach the power and originality of his dreams. It was those sounds that were brought to life in the BBC Symphony Orchestra's Total Immersion Day, the complete Edgar Varèse, at the Barbican in London back in May. We're about to hear highlights from the performances, classic Varèse scores such as Offrande for soprano and chamber orchestra, his classic percussion ensemble piece Ionization, and Equatorial, which combines ancient Mayan chants with the latest technology of the time, the early electronic instrument the onde martano. But we're beginning with Intégrale, for winds and percussion, written by Varèse in a Paris studio in the mid-1920s. It seems at times to reference melodies from Debussy or Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, but set within a counterpoint of tone colours, clusters of 11-note sound clouds in the winds against a battery of percussion. What's it about, if anything? Well, Varèse wrote his own programme note for Intégrale. The music is not a story, not a picture, nor a psychological or philosophical abstraction. It is simply my music, he said. And it begins with the kind of gesture he once described in a lecture as something being propelled into space with no hope of returning.